welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. My very special guest today in studio for the first time on the Vinnie Eastwood Show is Dr. Green, New Zealand's most noted cannabis activist, who in my analysis has generated more media hype about the issue around cannabis than any other activist in this country's history. I think he might have been arrested as many times as almost all of the other previous cannabis activists combined together. Has started a New Zealand's first big full-scale coffee shop called The Dactory, which has been shut down but is now being reopened. The driver of the normal cannabis has gone on tours around the country, including a relief mission to Christchurch, where he held out, what did you give away, like a pound of marijuana to those poor and unfortunate people who lost their grows in the quakes. Dr. Green, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie. It's a long time that I've known you since the time that we opened the Dactory, which is almost 5 years ago now.
Mm.
So we've all come some distance. Here you are with your own worldwide, international, and probably universal. I think they're listening to you on Mars, Vinnie. If anybody on Mars is going to listen to anybody, it's going to be you. So, because you're a little out of this world.
Yeah.
But it's a pleasure to be here in your bedroom.
Well, why don't you give us a wee bit of an update about what's actually been happening with you? Because I drove past the Dactory a couple of weeks ago and took some pictures because the Dactory sign had been getting taken down and everything.
Yep.
I mean, but firstly, before we go into it, I wanted you to actually give your background. Before you were a cannabis activist,
mm-hmm.
You helped to actually affect law change in, say, Saturday shopping, for example. Would you be able to
explain
a little bit about that?
That was during the 70s, the 1970s. It was, since the Second World War, it was illegal in New Zealand to open your shops on Saturday or Sunday. And when I got into the retail business in the mid-70s, that was still the case. Shops were not allowed to open on the weekend, and I couldn't understand why. So we did the old Nike trick, and we just did it. Mm-hmm. We opened our doors, and authorities started coming after us. And we countered with other strategies, and after a few years, we were successful, and laws were changed, and I sort of got the taste, if you will, for law reform. It was quite an exciting time, but I did think that it was relatively easy to change laws at that time, but I've subsequently shown that it's not easy at all, mm-hmm. and it really depends on official line and what propaganda is being put out at any given time. So, yeah, we started with Saturday shopping in the 70s. In the 1980s, I started New Zealand's first casino. Mm-hmm. I bought a ship. She was 157 feet long, carried 120 passengers plus crew, and we sailed outside our territorial waters into international waters. We gambled all night, which was perfectly legal, and came back in the morning, and they went fine for a little while until the government decided that we were an embarrassment to them and closed us down.
Well, didn't they sabotage you with some kind of cooks and stewards union or something?
We had some union strife, that's true. It wasn't the cooks and stewards, but it was problems with one area of the crew. And, yeah, they pulled some strikes and it was all designed to embarrass and cause us financial hardship, and they were ultimately successful. We were forced to close, and as a result, everybody went broke, and it was just a sad time in my life.
Mm.
But within a couple of years, the government had seen the light and issued a casino license to one of their large company mates, and of course, we've had a casino or casinos in this country ever since.
Mm.
But Then, of course, I moved to Australia and I actually started smoking cannabis when I was 39 years old. My adult son came to visit and one night he said, do you want to try some of this? And I knew he smoked cannabis, but I had never tried it. And so he was 21, I was 39. He put something in a pipe and said, toke on this. Or words to that effect. I don't even know what words were being used at that time. I've learnt the lingo subsequently about all the nicknames relating to this wonderful, miraculous herb that we enjoy so much. Mm-hmm. But we had a smoke and we talked and laughed and had interaction that fathers and sons, you know, once in their life, have to become a friend instead of father-son. And that's the night that we became mates. And I woke up the next morning and I was no longer a prohibitionist. I woke up the next morning thinking, that was pretty damn good last night. And I'm not sure what it is that people find offensive about cannabis.
Up until and that point, were you a bit of a rampant prohibitionist?
Like, I was your a prohibitionist, oh yes. There was a time when I was doing the Saturday shopping business in our business. We had a shoplifter caught one day, and I called the police to deal with this shoplifter. And before the police arrived, he tried to throw a bag of green leafy substance out of his pocket under my couch in the office, and I thought, I saw him, and I, hello, hello, what's going on here then? And when the police arrived, I happily handed this over to the police and said, look what this man had in his pocket. And it turns out he was prosecuted not for shoplifting, but prosecuted for possession of drugs. And I went home that particular night and sat at the dinner table with my family and my children, and proudly told them about what I had done, how I had caught this evil drug user person. And everybody thought, Dad, husband, you're doing a pretty damn good job. And I've regretted it ever since I learnt the truth about cannabis. And so I guess I go a little bit over the top now in my campaigning to change the law, because I'm embarrassed that through my ignorance, if you will, I was happy to see this person locked up whom I thought was evil, and I've subsequently learned, of course, that's not true. So, yeah, that was my introduction to cannabis, and I've not looked back. And, yep, I'm deeply involved in the campaign to legalize in this country and worldwide, for that matter, and there is an international movement, and everybody in the movement, Benny, right now is saying to each other, we're very close. The tipping point was Colorado and Washington, and America's been chipping away at these prohibition laws for some time, which is only fair, of course, because America are the ones that introduced these prohibition laws on cannabis in the first instance. So it's right and proper that they are leading the way out of this darkness, if you will. So, yeah, it's exciting times for everybody.
You know, there was an article in The Guardian, I think it might have even be this morning, saying that the drug law has become, the prohibition laws have become, quote, redundant. And I find that this is like a long time coming, because you've had years of activism and mainstream media attention on this issue, and even the Television 3 debate just recently, I believe, had a huge audience, as well as a 70% right of reply to say, let's legalize cannabis. And the thing that frustrated me the most about that wasn't necessarily that the negative side of the debate was simply just sitting there lying their ass off in order to get people to believe the deception of the cannabis laws. But the fact that Peter Dunn, the associate health minister who's been a backbone of the anti-cannabis movement for, basically in this country, he's the linchpin. And when he comes on, in response to 70% of respondents saying we want to legalize cannabis, it's just a simple, nah.
Peter Dunn is no longer the Associate Minister of Health. Peter Dunn has been caught up in a scandal of his own making, and some would use the old term hoist by his own petard. The man has controlled cannabis law reform in this country for the last 14 years, and it's just delightful that he's actually having, I beg your pardon, not 14, it was the last 6 years of the Labor government and 4 years now under the National government. So 10 years he's been controlling the lack of any movement on law reform in this country. But he's no longer a minister. And the new Associate Minister of Health is proceeding with this new legislation of the Psychoactive Substances Bill. And we're heading off with our campaign bus to Parliament next week. And we will be seeking to provide some information to the new Associate Minister of Health and pointing out to him that with the synthetic cannabis that's available in this country that is causing some health problems with some people, and the psychoactive bill, of course, is designed to regulate the synthetic cannabis and party pill markets. But the reality is that there would be no market for synthetic cannabis if real herbal cannabis was legally available in the marketplace. So we're going to point that out to him in words of one syllable, because that's what's needed when you talk to members of Parliament. Mm-hmm. Just little short words that they tend to understand.
Words that rhyme with rock or pit.
Yep. And we will encourage him to do the right thing by New Zealanders and recognise that worldwide the phenomenon is cannabis laws are being relaxed. Cannabis is being accepted more and more, certainly by the community, but progressively by authorities, those that pretend to be in charge, cannabis, in fact, is a medicine, and there is absolutely no sound reason to continue this lie on lie that we've been suffering since the 1920s. Mm. So it's exciting times for us all, and I confidently predict that worldwide cannabis will be legal in all democracies within the next 5 years.
Mm. Well, I would hope that's the case, and it appears to me, though, like it's interesting that we're talking about what was this, the Psychoactive Substances Bill is being passed in a parliament full of psychos who are very active in the government. And
I do tend to relate to this bill as being the psycho bill, and most people know what I'm talking about. Anything that's passed by some of our members of parliament can be classed as a psycho bill. So,
yeah.
It's exactly what it is.
And what's the exact intention of this bill? Is it just to say, oh, look, these synthetic cannabis drugs are very dangerous?
Actually, it's to regulate these. And this is a first worldwide, which is not a bad thing, I have to say. But what they are saying is that these artificial cannabis or the synthetic drugs that are being produced now and that are technically legal, all of them will be made illegal, but there will be a process for the companies that produce them to apply for a license to sell their product. And in order to achieve that, they will have to go through a fairly strict testing regime to ensure that there are no bad side effects. And when there is a synthetic cannabis product that successfully goes through the testing regime and is permitted to be sold on the market, then that's likely to create for that producer a worldwide market. Certainly, it'll be available for sale in New Zealand, but it's likely to be picked up by other countries if it's been legally produced here. But the real position is that if cannabis, the raw cannabis that we all love so much, if that was available legally, there would be absolutely no demand for the synthetic cannabis. A spokesman for the synthetic cannabis market said on the TV recently with that program that you referred to, said that they don't have a synthetic cannabis problem in California or Washington or Colorado or other places where medicinal cannabis is readily available, because nobody in their right mind would want to smoke this synthetic manufactured product if the real product is available, because the real product is our friend and it is our medicine and we enjoy it recreationally as well.
Have you noticed that what we try to synthesize and make ourselves becomes inherently more damaging than the natural thing from which we extracted it from?
That's true.
All right. Well, there's a general lesson in that for you, ladies and gentlemen. Natural is good, artificial, not good. I think it's the same with people. You know, if somebody's natural and they're actually a decent person, that kind of thing, as opposed to somebody who's artificial, who's got some kind of personality disorder that wants to kill you, those aren't the very nice people at all. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. This is a listener-supported show, so if you'd like to go to the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, we archive every single page. Commercial-free versions are available too there if you subscribe or donate. And this is the way that we keep all the bills paid so that we can bring on wonderful activists from all over the world from a whole huge range of subjects, so that every single day when you tune in, you will be listening to a diverse voice with incredible information and somewhat fabulous experiences from which you can actually derive some form of wisdom from. After all, if you listen to the same person over and over again all the time, like myself, for example, you don't really learn a whole bunch, particularly if that person's yourself. Right, my very special guest is Dr. Green, noted and famed and infamous cannabis activist right here in New Zealand. Welcome back to the show. We were talking just before we went away from break that the stuff that we synthesize from nature is actually worse for you than things that are actually found in nature. And in terms of the medicinal side of things, this plant is the most important medicinal plant in the world, period.
That's fair. It has been said that if cannabis didn't exist in the world and it was discovered in the deepest, darkest Amazon jungles, it would be hailed internationally as a wonder drug has been discovered. The fact that it has been demonized for a number of years is to the eternal shame of those people that badmouthed it right at the beginning. The reasons that cannabis is illegal has absolutely nothing at all to do with cannabis. It's all about politics and power and money. So cannabis is our friend and a friend of the community, and it is evil that for close to 90 years worldwide, it has been demonized, and millions and millions of people have been locked in jail all over the world. I myself have had far too much time in jail. You know, if you took my cannabis convictions out of my criminal record, I'm 63 years old, and if I had no cannabis convictions, I would have one conviction: failing to keep left, which in our country we drive on the left, but failing to keep left, $40 fine. A minor traffic offence is my criminal conviction. But with my cannabis convictions, I've done a number of years in jail, both in America and here in New Zealand. Cannabis is one of those products that has been demonised and has led to major distortions, I think, in our society, all due to a few rich people trying to get richer.
Do you know who these rich people are?
Oh, yes. It was during the 1920s. William Randolph Hearst, was responsible for demonizing cannabis. He demonized marijuana, which, of course, is the was the Mexican nickname for cannabis.
Which means Mary Jane.
Mary Jane is what it means.
Pronounced marijuana.
Yep. And marijuana was demonized in the 1920s in the U.S. as being this new evil drug that had hit the market. And it wasn't until a few days before it was made illegal that the American Medical Association were made aware that they were about to make marijuana illegal, but actually they were talking about cannabis. Hang on, they said. That's our medicine. A large number of our medicines are based on extracts from the cannabis plant. You can't make that illegal. But when the juggernaut of politics and governments roll over all the minor opposition, these little voices were lost. And so we've had, since the 1920s worldwide, this ridiculous lie that has been perpetrated on the human race.
So somebody who is perhaps a major pharmaceutical company would make a shockingly large amount of money if the alternatives to their drugs didn't exist or were made illegal, wouldn't they?
But it wasn't the pharmaceuticals that arranged or worked towards demonizing and making cannabis illegal, because the pharmaceutical companies didn't have the power back then. That's why cannabis was mostly the medicine. Mm. It was for other reasons. The petrochemical industry, for example, they wanted to see hemp closed down, banned. They didn't want to see paper manufacturing occurring using hemp. They wanted to maintain the trees. William Hearst owned vast forests and newsprint manufacturing plants. Well, when you've got two-thirds of your assets tied up in, or two-thirds of your wealth tied up in these two main areas of your assets, and there's a threat that your forests will become worthless and your paper manufacturing plants become redundant, then you can't possibly keep your newspaper business alive. So he used his newspaper business to demonize the products. And it was all designed to close down the hemp business, that is, the cannabis plant with low THC, without the psychoactive properties. The thing that we'd used for thousands of years to make rope and fabrics and
sails.
I mean, canvas is a word that's derived from cannabis. So it's been a friend of humankind since records began.
Mm. Since the days of the pharaohs.
Since the date of the pharaohs. And yes, they're finding stashes, sometimes still green plants, stashed in tombs in different parts of the world.
A bit expensive for a stash tin, don't you
think? Well, yes. I mean, when you've got 2,000 and 3,000 and 4,000 year old weed. I mean, I personally have smoked, the oldest weed I've smoked was something like 25 or 30 years old. A grower used to bury his crop each year, and one day he was digging a hole for his latest crop, and blow me down if he didn't find a tin that he had mislaid something like 25 or 30 years earlier. He had a date written on the can. And he pulled this bud out, which ended up on in my hand, well, a small portion of it. And it looked quite dark and black, in fact, but it tasted beautiful. It tasted, if I was a drinker, you could say it was a fine wine that had been left to mature. And in this instance, it seemed to have happened with cannabis as well. I don't know whether that's regular or not, but
What about the strength of it? Was it
I'd been smoking for some hours a wide range of different cannabis with this particular person that I was with, so I can't say that I got any more stoned than I already was. So I can't tell you about the strength of it.
Oh, well, irrelevant, I think. Because I think the real crux of the issue here is that you got people's rights being violated, okay? And most importantly, I think the right to life, and this is what most people don't really get about cannabis, is that it's not necessarily just because you're recreationally using it, not hurting anybody or anything like that. There are actually people out there who literally die if they don't have their cannabis. And this is what the law really, really affects.
This is true, and it's one of those twists and turns when we are fighting to end this prohibition, that there are many, many people that are caught up in the illegality. They have a lack of access to the plant. They face imprisonment. There's plenty of people in this country and elsewhere around the world who have used the plant as a medicine, that it's necessary to use it as a medicine for their health and well-being. But nonetheless, the law is what it is, and people get locked up in jail for it. And I think that is to the eternal shame of our political leaders, no matter which country you come from. If you have political leaders that are making decisions based on falsehoods, on rumours and hearsay and nonsense without actually looking at the science. I mean, you cannot base social policy on anything but the science. And scientists today say that cannabis is less harmful in the community than many legal products, whether it be tobacco or alcohol being the two main ones. But cannabis is less harmful to the individual and to the community than that. And the effects
of prohibition. It's less harmful than water.
Well, yes, people die from drinking too much water. There are a wide variety of different products that are dangerous to your health if used to excess. Cannabis, on the other hand, there's no one ever died from an overdose of cannabis.
Apparently, the overdose of cannabis manifests itself as feeling sleepy, hungry, and then going to bed.
Yes, but in order for it to be dangerous for your health, perhaps leading to death, you actually have to smoke, and this is only an estimate because no one's ever been able to do it, but you actually have to smoke something like 30 to 40,000 joints, cigarette-size cannabis joints, 30 to 40,000. Do you hear that number? In 15 minutes. Now, you can't physically do that in 15 minutes. I mean, I have trouble smoking a single joint, let alone 30 or 40,000 joints. So if you can't physically do it, then you have to say it's an impossibility. There is nothing dangerous about overdosing on cannabis. As you rightly say, the worst that's going to happen is you'll get sleepy and fall asleep.
Yeah, and this reminds me of trials that were conducted with intravenous vitamin C that Dr. Thomas Levy talked about, that they had a test group of people and they inserted up to, I think it was like 40 pounds of intravenous vitamin C right into their veins over a period of about 18 months with no notable side effects.
Okay.
Right, it's one of these two substances, cannabis being one, vitamin C being the other, for which there is no known lethal dose.
Okay.
It just can't be done. And I think that's what's going to happen here, or at least what I reckon should happen, is we should be taking chemicals and toxins and things of this nature that are currently in our food supply and our water and in the air and all over the place, and try and make sure that these things actually get solved. He's going to have a wee bit of a cough now. Go off for a bit. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, can you think for a moment of any other instance in human history where something that will actually save your life has been mandated by the government as something that is illegal? All right. And what is the inherent hypocrisy of that? Think about this. Like, if you were going into I don't know, surgery, and you had a wound that needed to be cut out. And the government, instead of allowing you to cut out, say, a bullet wound or something of that nature with a scalpel, they outlaw scalpels because they can be dangerous. All right? And this is essentially the exact same mentality when you're making cannabis illegal. It's just like, oh, it could be dangerous. Well, actually, it could be. If you were really, 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 really stupid, because I don't believe everybody should be smoking cannabis all day, every day, operating heavy machinery and so on and so forth, and smoking in childcare centres and things like that, and passing joints to the kids. No. Talk about reasonable adults. And I watched a video last night, Dr. Green, about... Mm-hmm. How it was for children back in the 50s and 60s and even earlier, whereby the world wasn't coated in bubble wrap for you, and there was virtually no obesity because kids were always outside playing. People took responsibility for themselves. You know, people failed at things, people succeeded at things, and they just had to frickin' deal with it. Nowadays, you've got all these frickin' distractions. There's no real social interaction going on anymore to great degrees. And I think humanity's really basically deteriorating. And if there's one thing I know about weed, it's this. It brings people together.
I agree with you entirely, Vinny. I was born in 1950, so your comments are pretty much accurate. We ate healthy food. We ate food that, in a lot of cases, was grown in our own gardens. We didn't have the processed foods and the highly refined foods available in those days. And you're right, we didn't have lots of fat people. And there's no question that the modern diet is as responsible for the obesity epidemic that we have. But it's not controlled. We have foods that are unhealthy for the community. And I don't want to get into that debate because it's about, you know, how healthy and how beneficial is cannabis to the community. And demonizing it as it's been done for 90 plus years is really what it's all about. We're having to overcome prejudices to bring us to the point where communities around the world are starting to demand change. And Colorado and Washington showed us the way.
Healthy states indeed. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. You can check out the archives there. Also on YouTube, Mr. News Guerrilla Media is the YouTube channel. Links on the homepage. We'll be right back.
Just in time, head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. Can't do this all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm not Superman, but laser beams do shoot out of my eyes if I ever see David Rockefeller walking the street, yo. And my very special guest is the Super DAC Man. During Halloween, he dresses up as Count Dacula, saying, "I want to smoke your blood." It's DAC Green.
All right. And other suitable lies like that are the reason why we're illegal.
Yes.
You speak like a member of the establishment, Vinny, telling lies about people. But, yes, we do smoke some DAC. That's true. Let's talk about
The Dactory.
The Dactory. People, first of all, you will probably have some listeners that aren't familiar with the term DAC.
Ah, yes.
And just to clarify that, DAC is the New Zealand, and it's typically or uniquely a New Zealand nickname for cannabis, is the word DAC, spelled D-A-K. It is a word that entered the New Zealand language before the 1900s. It came from South Africa. It's based on the...
Dacha.
Dacha, that's it. But New Zealand diggers in the Boer War in South Africa were not able to pronounce it Dacha because it takes a bit of a throat thing. So it became DAC, and that's been the name ever since. As I said, a uniquely New Zealand nickname. So a Dactory is a name that we invented when we were coming up with names for a club. We thought it would be fun if we could rent a factory. And then one of our people said we would call it a Dactory, and it just made sense, and it was a lovely name. So as a name for our cannabis club, the Dactory became synonymous with that movement. So we opened in November, 4.5 years ago, in Auckland, and we finally, late last year, were closed down by the police after more than 4 years. We'd had a couple of prosecutions. I spent a little time in jail, but we were a full-on cannabis club. And we openly sold cannabis from a dispensary. And most of the people that came to our club, other New Zealanders, had never seen more than one strain of cannabis at a time. I remember you, Vinnie, coming to film the opening. And at opening, we had a range of about 12 different cannabis strains on display. And you were so excited taking film of all of this, and you've made some lovely films and put them up on the internet. Mm-hmm. We had people that were coming in and just standing there with their mouth open, not quite dribbling, but mentally at least.
Well, they couldn't dribble.
Drooling.
They couldn't dribble because of the cotton mouth.
That's right. That's right. And to see this display of a variety of different cannabis strains was quite exciting for people.
I remember one time there was 21 strains.
Yes, we did. We built it up till we had about 21. I think 25 was the most that we ever had on any given day, 25 different strains. But it was lovely, and it was a very adult way to consume cannabis, that you could walk into a place that was similar to an alcohol establishment, but we have no alcohol. We don't allow alcohol near our premises. We don't think the two mix. Alcohol gives people a different vibe, and people in the cannabis culture don't really relate to that alternative vibe. That's for drinkers to enjoy their thing. But we have a variety of different strains, and people enjoy that. But the politics became involved. I got released from jail last year, and 9 days after my release, the police raided our premises and made it clear in words of one syllable that was it. It was over. They were closing us down. They wanted us out of their district. So we did. We stayed for a while. We kept in their face, but it just became this constant look, on a weekly basis, the police would come around. We'd be closed, but they would come in, and under the terms of my bail conditions, they were permitted to check the premises. And they took full advantage of that and brought drug dogs in and loads of police on a regular basis to search our premises, and all designed to just be harassment to move us out of their district. So finally, we did. We moved a few months ago, and then last month, we located new premises in what we think is an ideal location in a small town in the centre of the North Island called Taumarunui, a small town that I happened to grow up in. And I was back visiting and we came across these premises that were formerly used as part of a freezing works. There was a cafeteria and office block. And it's 1,500 square metres. It's twice the size of the old Dactory. And there was a deal to be done, so we did it. And we take over in a couple of weeks these new premises. We plan to spend about 4 months, 4.5 months, renovating and painting and cleaning up. Not a great deal to do, but enough for a small group of dedicated volunteers to keep us busy for a little while. And then on the 19th of November this year, we will, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we will have a grand opening of Dactory Mark II, the new and improved version. And at 4 o'clock on the 19th of November will be exactly 5 years to the minute since we opened the Auckland Dactory. And so we're able to continue this, and we're not going away. This time we own our premises. There will be no landlord telling us to move on. And our people will gather together. Our members of our club will be travelling through this town as they go elsewhere, and they will call in and support us because we will be the beacon for law reform. And after law has been reformed, then we will continue to be relevant by running a cannabis hemp operation there with a wide variety of hemp products, including a wide range of cannabis. That's what we're looking to achieve. So it's an exciting time. The law is getting close to change around the world, and with the pressure that we bring to bear in this country, we expect it to happen within the next very short space of time.
Mm-hmm. I liken this to the quickening that's been happening with fluoride, for example, being taken out of the water in New Plymouth and then Hamilton, and people who have been trying to get it, campaign to get it out of the water for a long time. And I said to them, look, you know, the fight's not over. You've just got to keep getting the pressure on. As soon as you've got successes, that's actually when you need to fight a lot harder. And I believe the same is true of cannabis at this particular point in time, is that despite the fact that it's not legal yet, you can't let that discourage you. In fact, the more pressure that they bring to bear on you, the harder you need to fight, because it means that you're winning.
Yes, of course. And let's be realistic. Police around the world are facing increasing pressure on their budgets. Prisons are costing more and more money to keep open and keep incarcerating people. There is a recognition that it is an absolute waste of taxpayers' money to continue seeking to enforce the unenforceable. We've got something like 7,000 police officers in total in this country. We have a population of over 4 million people spread throughout the country. We've got areas in this country that mankind is yet to cast their eyes upon. So how do authorities think it's going to be possible to stamp out cannabis use in the future? They can't even keep it out of high security prisons. And if you can't keep cannabis out of high security prisons, how can you possibly expect to keep it out of the community? And with that sort of argument and the desire to have a controlled and regulated market, that's more likely to keep it out of the hands of children. And with education, we will be able to support people that may from time to time have issues and health issues and find cannabis is not actually right for them. During the time that we were operating our club, every now and then we'd have somebody come to us and say, look, I'm not feeling well, I've been doing this or I've been acting a little crazy, and cannabis is just not good for me. And I would encourage them not to actually consume, and if that's what it takes, because it's not right for everybody. But for the majority of people, it is a medicine and it is fun.
Yeah, exactly. But despite the fact that it might not be right for everybody, I'm sure jail is right for nobody who smokes cannabis.
Absolutely. That's the last place that we should be sending people.
Now, speaking of which, there has, ironically, been a health benefit with your recent stint in jail that you've managed to give up smoking.
I have. The day that I was incarcerated was the last day that tobacco smoking was permitted in New Zealand prisons. And so to be locked up and have no smell of tobacco around, I didn't really have a major problem.
All right.
So I gave it up.
That's a $90,000 quit smoking program paid for by the New Zealand government. We'll be right back after the break.